The Purpose Podcast, a podcast series brought to you by Social Business Trust to celebrate the 10-year anniversary. The podcast will explore social impact, corporate purpose, and social innovation. We'll be bringing together diverse voices and perspectives from in and around Social Business Trust's network to look at the importance of the social sector in an ever-changing world. We'll also show how working in partnership with businesses and volunteers helps social enterprises and charities grow and deliver life-changing impact. Thanks goes to the corporate partners for their ongoing support: Bain, Charles Russell Speechleys, Clifford Chance, EY, Permira, Permira Debt Managers, Refinitiv, and Thomson Reuters.
In this episode, Changing Lives, Social Enterprises and the Part They Play, we are talking to three CEOs at the forefront of social enterprise. Anne-Marie Canning, MBE and CEO of The Brilliant Club. Chris Wright, CEO of Catch 22, and Tokombo Ajasa Oluwa, CEO of Career Ready.
I'd love to see the private sector really thinking about how it can provide meaningful ladders of opportunity through organisations.
We need to build much more relational, engaging services. We need to believe in people, quite simply.
When I think about how do we close the gap? It's really having an appreciation of how their economic capital, their social capital, and their insight into cultural capital can fluctuate according to the particular hand they've been dealt in life.
So let's kick off and find out more about your social enterprises. What do they do? Let's start with you, Tokombo.
Hi there. Career Ready is the charity that I head up, and we work with schools and colleges across the UK, focusing on social mobility and connecting their students to employers from a wide spectrum of different sectors, supporting the employers to find new talent and supporting the young people on their career journeys.
Fantastic, thanks. Moving on to you, Chris.
From Catch 22. Catch 22, contemporary name, but is traces our roots back to the late 18th century when we were established as the Philanthropic Society. And our founders were concerned about the children of felons on the streets of London. 230 years later, we describe ourselves as a cradle to career public service delivery organisation. So we run a whole range of public services, from running schools through to children's social care, to justice services and employability and skills.
Great. I'm guessing, Chris, the name is a reference to the Joseph Heller book of the same name, right? And The Impossible Situation.
That's right. We had a very, very trendy branding agency, and Catch 22 was supposed to capture the circumstances many of the people we work with find themselves in. So you can't get a job because you haven't got anywhere to live. You can't get anywhere to live because you can't get a job, sort of.
Exactly, yeah, sounds very up to me. And finally, Anne-Marie, please.
The Brilliant Club helps underrepresented pupils access highly selective universities. And how we do that is we place PhD tutors into state schools to deliver schemes of work based on their own fascinating research, or to become teachers in the state sector.
So great. So some really common themes emerging here in education, social mobility and in empowerment. Clearly, we're missing a lot of opportunities as a society where we could say there is no common baseline for all, with large swathes of gifted people falling through the cracks. How do we close the gap and ensure people from all backgrounds have access to the tools and resources they need to be successful? And let's start on this one with you, Anne-Marie.
The UK has some of the lowest rates of social mobility in the OECD countries, and we know there are two contributing factors to getting a decent start in life. The first one is the driver of education, opening up education, good quality education and educational opportunity for young people from disadvantaged backgrounds. And the second one is around employment opportunities and what happens in the labour market. So yes, organisations like ours can do incredible programmes that deliver great outcomes for the children and young people that we work with. But we also need to look beyond programmes and think about the systems and the complex systems that children live their lives in, and really have a joined up approach to creating great life chances for children from disadvantaged backgrounds. And that means being really clear sighted about some of the drivers of the disadvantage that we see, not least child poverty here in the UK. So we can do great things to change life chances. And we know that both from our experiences in our organisations, we know the children, we know the data about how we can boost things like access to great universities, but also the analysis from academics like Professor Raj Shetty at Harvard University that show it is possible to make serious difference to that ecosystem of life chances by working on a neighbourhood by neighbourhood basis to really change and switch around the opportunities that young people have access to.
Well, I'd like to build on what Anne-Marie said, really. At a general population level, there's all kinds of inbuilt inequalities and disadvantages that many people face, but there are ways around dealing with that. But we typically work with people who have fallen outside of the mainstream. So, for example, many of the children, young people we teach in our schools are children and young people who've been excluded from mainstream schools for all kinds of reasons, behaviour, but often that behaviour is as a consequence of the circumstances they find themselves in their family situation. And then we work across the custodial estate, working with largely men who, you know, ended up in prison, you know, and you can track that kind of school pipeline into the prison, because these people have had really difficult experiences in school, and it scars them in many ways, and they end up in the criminal justice system. And I guess for somebody who I spent 30 odd years of my career in and around services working with people who found themselves outside the mainstream, and the one common feature, I think, is people who feel that they have no agency, no ability to influence what happens to them, or the way they're engaged with by the system, where they're transacted with as opposed to related to. And, you know, so I think one of the things we need to be doing is giving people a sense of their own agency, a sense of control, a sense that they've got some way of having a way to influence what happens in their lives. And a lot of this comes down to some very simple things that we need to build much more relational, engaging services. We need to be responsive. We need to listen, and we need to believe in people. Quite simply.
Yeah, it's really interesting. You know, these early pathways. What do you think, Kumbo?
I think for me, Toby, the key word that comes to mind listening to Chris and Anne-Marie is about equity, and it's about really understanding what individuals. Specific needs are based on their experiences to date. So when I think about how do we close the gap, it's really having an appreciation of how their economic capital, their social capital, and their insight into cultural capital can fluctuate according to the particular hand they've been dealt in life. I mean, from a personal experience, I was brought up in the East End of London when, you know, before the Olympics came, so East London was not this kind of trendy part of London that it's become now. And although it was relative for me, my experience was quite a challenging one growing up in the area. When I compare it to somewhere like Blackpool, I can appreciate the privilege that I had living in the capital. And being able to get on a tube in 30 minutes, I'm in Canary Wharf, or I'm in the West End. So the access to opportunity, the access to some of these massive employers was literally just a 30-minute tube ride away from me. That reality is very different for a young person who comes from a similar background with big ambitions, but lives in a part of the country like Blackpool, where they don't have the same access to big employers and big corporations. So for me, I think if we emphasize the importance of equity and find ourselves looking at it from a holistic perspective, but at the same time appreciating the nuances of different people's experiences and the challenges they face, I think that could lead to a really long-term solution rather than a band-aid that's in place for a couple of years, a new government comes in place, and then that's all ripped apart, and then we're back to square one.
Yeah, then that's really interesting, isn't it? The reversal of policies and the impacts that has, two steps forward and one step back. So in all of this, clearly there's a role for the private sector. But what's your view on that? Let's start with you, Chris. What's your view on the role of the private sector and how we can leverage that?
I mean, I think this country gets itself into a real pickle when it starts to talk about the private sector, the public sector, that the default producer of public services is the state. And we need to be a bit more imaginative. I think actually the population changes are taking place in demographically. We're arriving in a situation where there's a much more enlightened view of the role the private sector can play in the emergence of ESG kind of goals, thinking differently about the contribution that the private sector plays in creating jobs, wealth, distribution of wealth and so forth. And I'm really interested in notions. There's a really fascinating methodology emerged out of the States called collective impact, where private sector organisations work in a very collaborative and collective way with public systems to find solutions to often wicked entrenched problems. So I'm a big fan of the role that the private sector can play. And I think the public systems have to be much more open to the role that the private sector can play. All of us who work in charities and social enterprises benefit hugely from resources provided to us by the private sector. But one of the things I'm most interested in is the disciplines that you can bring from the private sector into delivering social outcomes. So I'm really interested in the commercial skills or the kind of entrepreneurial mindset that you can apply to decision making, so you can achieve better and more effective and quicker decisions than you often see in bureaucratic organisations. I think we've got to be much more open, embracing, engaging, and we need to move away from kind of old style views of corporate social responsibility as though it's something nice to do, to a recognition that the private sector has a fundamental role to play in creating the conditions that generate a good life for people.
Yeah, again, there's a lot of really interesting things there. I mean, sustainable growth and sustainable business goals and the emergence of sustainable investment and the ESG as a data set to help power those decisions. Tukunbo, what do you think?
I think there's, I mean, totally agree with Chris's points. I think to just really add to that, it's about providing a level of flexibility when we're talking about those collaborations. So corporates are used to having charities arrive on their door and looking at that CSR approach of working. And I think what I found quite beneficial is actually twisting that narrative a bit and really looking at where the value add is to businesses, to private sectors. Where can they see a benefit, a commercial benefit, as well as a societal benefit of working in collaboration with charities. So then you have a bit more of an equilibrium in the relationship and the partnerships. Because I think sometimes if you start those collaborations not on a level footing, it's quite hard to really understand where the nucleus comes in regards to aligned values. So for me, I think what we need to do with businesses is be able to provide a level of flex where they can see that expertise as well as resource, as well as finance is of equal value. And then we also need to think about the millions of employees. We're now in a generation where employees want to see a lot more of a social impact for the businesses that they're working for. Success isn't just defined by the financial bottom line. You're finding a lot of people have different drivers now. So there is a real value add and a productivity add to businesses if you're inspiring the employees of these organizations to make social change, as well as the machine that is the private sector itself. So I'm very keen in us as a sector being brave enough to really explore what value can look like for all parties, and realizing there is a level of compromise and an element of flex that is needed to really fulfill the potential of private, third, and public sector working together in unison.
Yeah, I agree. I think you made some really great points there. I think, you know, it's not coming cap in hand. It's coming as an equal player, an equal partner in this, in the collaboration between private and the organisations such as SBT and the public sector. It's a two-way street. And I think another great point you make is that more and more staff are really putting a lot of impetus, a lot of weight on the companies they're working for and how they show up in this space. Anne-Marie, let's move to you. What do you think?
I think the evidence is really clear that when we get social mobility right, we can have massive productivity gains right across the economy. So, again, the work of Raj Shetty at Harvard has shown that really clearly, looking at the tax records of US citizens. And that's really, I think, the end goal for us all, isn't it? To create this ecosystem of opportunity and great jobs and a real great life for everyone in society. But I guess I'd have some really clear asks of colleagues in the private sector. And at the Brilliant Club, we've been so lucky to get some great support via SBT from colleagues in the private sector. But I look at the lives of the kids that I work with at the Brilliant Club and in my other jobs that I hold in places like Bradford. And children there really need mums and dads who've got a decent living wage, have good living hours. We need those children to be able to go to university and then go through recruitment processes that are fair and contextualise and understand young people's potential. I'd love for the private sector to make some real moves on unpaid internships, which are a structural barrier to young people from less advantaged backgrounds, talented young people getting on in life. I'd love to see the private sector really thinking about how it can provide meaningful ladders of opportunity through organisations. But I think my biggest lesson in how private and public can come together is in the city of Bradford, where I hold a public appointment for the Department for Education, something called an opportunity area. And there we can make all the wonderful changes in education, in the public education system that we want to. But what's really fundamental is that young people need jobs in the city of Bradford. And so working with colleagues at organisations like PwC, we've really thought about how we can bring those jobs into the city. And that sort of joined up approach, I think, is so critical, that place-based focus on how you build opportunity out for young people. That's what's going to make the difference. And so to see the private sector, you know, not being agnostic about place, but here in the UK today, really thinking quite carefully about it. And it comes back to Gumbo's point around Blackpool. You know, I'm from Doncaster, thinking meaningfully about how we can build private sector employment opportunities, good quality employment opportunities into those areas has to be a part of the solution.
Thank you. So let's focus on some of the stories of impact, really bring this to life and make it real, that your organisations have made that marked you the most. And this time, if we could start with you, Tukunbo.
So, Toby, I've been with Career Ready now literally a year, and definitely one of the stories that resonates the most with me is one of our graduates, an alumni named Daniel Clark. So Daniel was on the program many moons ago. I think it was 2004, 2005. And a long story short, Daniel failed his GCSEs, completed his state school education with just one GCSE. And through finding Career Ready whilst he was studying an MVQ at college, his whole attitude to self-empowerment and self-development changed and evolved, because he saw an offer that really was about unlocking his power and his potential as an individual rather than a statistic or a stereotype. And he went on to go on to Oxbridge, complete first, and is now in his third job since graduating, and sits on our advisory board, our national advisory board. So from a beneficiary to now an influencer in everything that we do in our organization. And really, he just epitomizes the value of what social mobility can look like. And he's a great advert for us to be able to inspire employers from all different sectors that if you refresh and complement your existing recruitment pipelines for new talent, you could be pleasantly surprised. And a lot of the time, it's not about a lack of ability and talent, it's lack of opportunity. So Daniel is one of those stories that really resonates with me, because he literally knocked the ball out of the park. And that was just having that light bulb moment whilst he was on the Career Ready program.
Fantastic story. Chris, how about you with Catch 22?
Yeah, thanks. It's lovely listening to stories like Tucumbo has just outlined. Catch 22 works with close to 60-odd thousand service users a year. And I've been around 10 years as the CEO and 5 years before that. So I've been around an organization which has reached out and touched the lives of lots of people. And, you know, and that includes stories from, you know, kids who have been excluded from mainstream school with attendance levels of 2% starting to go back to school again and, you know, achieving, you know, proper attendance levels, which allows them a chance to learn and so on. From, you know, people coming out of custody and getting jobs or having a place to live. One of my favourite impact stories around Catch 22 is for a number of years we've run a programme with the British Exploring Society where we've managed to send a group of young people away on expeditions. We had a group who went across the Sinai a few years ago. A group sailed a tall ship back from Norway. Wonderful stories seeing young people grow and develop and feel a sense of purpose and pride in what they can do. And then some of the other things we've done, which I'm really proud of from an impact level, is around system change. And we ran a program in East Cheshire where we work with a cohort of children who are known as children in need, a group of kids who end up on average nationally being referred into children's social care. And within 12 months, 45% of those kids are re-referred into children's social care because the system isn't sufficiently focused on working with those kids and their families. And we devised a model which was very kind of focused on the family and resulted in a 23% reduction in referral rates. Or we've incubated new organisations into the ecosystem. So an organisation called Unlock Graduates, which is designed to attract high-quality graduates to become prison officers. We're currently incubating an organisation called The Lighthouse, which is going to rethink what children's homes look like. So there's a whole range of things that we've been involved in over the years, which I'm particularly proud of. And then I talked at the beginning about our 200-year-old history. Well, in 1876, one of our founders established what became the Probation Service. So this is an organisation which has deep roots in public systems, in working with individuals, both at an individual level and a systemic level.
Amazing. Anne-Marie, tell us about some of the impacts that you're seeing with the Brilliant Club.
I think the student that's had the most impact on me is a student called Connor, who I met when he was around 16. This was when I worked at King's and we used to partner with the Brilliant Club. And so Connor's always wanted to be a doctor. It's been his life's ambition. He went to a school that wasn't doing particularly well, but he kept a hold of that dream to be a doctor. And he did the Scholars Programme with the Brilliant Club, which really gave him insight into the world of medicine. And he applied to King's to become a doctor. He got a place on our extended medical degree programme at the university and he came to train to be a doctor. And that might be where the story ends and it would be a great story in itself. But actually, Connor didn't just come and train to be a doctor at King's. He actually became the top performing medical school student in that year. And he's gone on to do incredible things, including intercalating into immunology and getting a first class degree there, but then also setting up a range of initiatives to help the next generation of students. And for me, Connor really is an example of what happens when you give people that moment of opportunity and then subsequent support to really flourish. But I think one of the loveliest things about becoming CEO at the Brilliant Club and my first day as CEO was the first day of lockdown is that I constantly bump into people who tell me that they did the Scholars Programme with the Brilliant Club and how it opened up this world of higher education to them. Just recently, we advertised for a young trustee to join our board. And it was one of the greatest privileges to read applications from lots and lots of young people who participated in programs and were so determined to open up opportunity to the next generation of pupils. I mean, we can all talk about data and impact, you know, some of the stark data points around who gets to go to university, who gets to have really wonderful jobs. But actually, it's those stories that really make a difference. They're the things that really hit you where it matters.
Absolutely. Some really, really interesting points made. It's clear that today's discussion has only scratched the surface. Social enterprises and charities are undoubtedly playing a crucial role in providing young people with opportunities to fulfil their potential. Yet we know, hearing from our three guests today, that there is so much more to be done. From making sure parents are on a living wage, to simply listening to what young people need. The private sector obviously has a vital role to play. The challenge is achieving the necessary scale to accelerate collaboration and amplify impact.
The Purpose Podcast,